in 1 Thessalonians 2 really is talking about his ministry, his service. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Some of you are thinking, well, I'm not an apostle. Not that I've known. I'm not a pastor. I'm not an elder. I'm not a ministry leader. I serve. Well, you know what? These verses in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 1 to 12, is speaking of leaders, but it is not directly applicable only to leaders, because it's actually for all of us. Because each and every one of us have been called to love God with our heart, our soul, our mind, and our strength. Let's do a little review. We've got to review chapter 1. I've redone my outline for chapter 1. I'm just going to give it to you. I'm not going to preach it, okay? Chapter 1 is about the gospel that comes into our lives and transforms us. And here's what it transforms. Genuine conversion transforms our direction. That's verses 4 to 6. For we know, brothers, loved by the Lord, that he has chosen you, because our gospel came to you not only in word, but also in power and in the Holy Spirit and in full conviction. And you know what kind of men we proved to be among you for your sake, and you became imitators of us and of the Lord. Genuine conversion actually changes our direction. Look at verses 7 to 8. Genuine conversion changes our reflection, how we reflect this gospel. Verse 7, so that you became an example of all believers in Macedonia and in Achaia, for not only has word of the Lord sounded forth from you, but your faith in God has gone forth everywhere. When the gospel gets a hold of us, it not only changes our direction, it changes our reflection. It changes how we reflect this message to others. It makes a difference in our lives and how we live. Verse 9, genuine conversion changes our affection. You turn to God from idols to serve the living and the true God. True conversion changes what your heart is set upon. That's what happens when a person trusts Christ. It's not just putting up your hand or walking an aisle or signing a card or becoming a member of a church. It's conversion. It is transformation. And it changes the very core, the very heart of the person. That's why Paul said you turn to God from idols. That was a 180 for them. And true conversion, genuine conversion, not only changes our direction, our reflection, our affection, it also changes our consideration. Verse 10. Because now these people are not just living for themselves. And they're not just motivated by what is now and here or here and now, but they are motivated because they are now waiting for his Son from heaven. They have something that they're looking for. Guess you could have put down the word, it changes our expectation. I put down our consideration. It's what we take time and ponder and think, and what changes us and moves us. John Stott, in speaking of 1 Thessalonians chapters really 1 and 2, states that the church that receives the gospel must first of all pass it on, and the church which passes on the gospel must embody it. And that's what this church is doing. That's what this church in Thessalonica, that only knew a few weeks of the Apostle Paul's ministry, they were not only passing on the message of the gospel, they were embodying it. Now we come to chapter 2. Stott on chapter 2 says, part of the abiding value of 1 Thessalonians 2, listen to this, is the insight it gives us into Paul's pastoral heart, or his heart as a servant of God, his heart as a ministry leader, his heart as an elder, his heart as a shepherd, his heart as someone who was loving God with their strength. This chapter gives us insight into Paul's heart in these chapters. Perhaps more than anywhere else in his letters, he discloses his mind, he expresses his emotion, and here Paul bears his soul. He looks at this church in Thessalonica, and he literally opens his heart and says, "Folks, I love you." Haddon Robinson writes, "For church leaders, perhaps no factor contributes more to legitimate authority and credibility than authentic Christian character." Yeah, it's not about position. It's not about title, but it's about authentic Christian character. It is what Aristotle calls ethos. In New Testament terms, it's being mature, upright. These days, if we want credibility in our church, get this, genuine character has to come through. And folks, this is what needs to be seen in our leaders, all of us. As we lead ministries, as we serve in ministries, as we are part of what God is doing here, as you are part of loving God with all your strength, what kind of people make a difference? What kind of leaders make a difference? Well, authentic leaders who make a difference. That's the message of 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. Let me read the text. "For you yourselves know, brothers, that our coming to you was not in vain. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict." It wasn't easy. "For our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive, but just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts. For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with pretext for greed, God is witness. Nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children." There's an image, isn't it? "So, being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. For you remember, brothers, our labor and our toil. We work night and day that we might not be a burden to you, any of you, while we proclaim to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct toward you believers. For you know how," and here's another image, "you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory." Let me give you a little background of what has brought us to this point. Paul's brief mission of a little over 3 weeks came to kind of a climactic end in Thessalonica. There was a public riot, and there were charges that were brought against Paul that were so serious that Paul actually had to flee from the city. Paul's critics, who in the text, it was the Jews of the city who were his most violent and vehement critics, Paul's critics took advantage of this. So they looked and they said, Paul has disappeared suddenly. So they took advantage of that. And in order to undermine what Paul was trying to do and what was happening in this church and his authority as an apostle, they determined, since he wasn't there, they were going to discredit him. So they launched a smear campaign against Paul. Now, by studying Paul's defense here in chapter 2, we can kind of reconstruct some of the slanders that they had. Let's walk through them. "He ran away," they sneered, "and he hasn't been seen since." Obviously, he got out of Dodge so quickly. He has just got to be motivated by personal gain. "He's just one more of those phony teachers who tramped all the way down the Ignatian Way and found his way to Thessalonica." In a word, he's a charlatan. Don't believe him. He's in this job only for what he can get out of it in terms of his stuff and his power. They looked at Paul and they thought, well, when opposition rises, he finds himself in danger. He turned heel and ran. He doesn't care about you, Thessalonians. If he had, he wouldn't have abandoned you. He's much more concerned with his own skin than he is with your souls. You can hear some of those criticisms, can't you? It was probably those kind of criticisms and perhaps a whole lot more that were launched against the Apostle Paul. But one of the things we find in this chapter is Paul says very straightforwardly that he has nothing to hide and that the facts speak for themselves. Oh yeah, Paul was not afraid to let the facts speak for themselves. Folks, truth never has to worry. Truth never has to be ashamed. Here we learn really what kind of leader the Apostle Paul was. Now, this is not a recruiting message for our church. However, this is a challenge today to all of us as leaders and as servants in our church. As whether you're working in our children's ministry, in our adult ministries, whether you're involved in worship or teaching or personal hands-on caring, this is a call for each and every one of us to take a look within. It's a call for each and every one of us, as James says, to take a look at ourselves in the mirror of God's Word and check out what we see. Now, this text is also a call for each and every one of us who may not be serving. And this is a call for us to step up. Because if each and every one of us want to love God with our strength, then folks, one of your primary areas of service needs to be within your local church. And I want to be a person that makes a difference, don't you? You could answer. I might get done a little faster. I want to make a difference. I just don't want to put in time. I just don't want to warm a seat. Authentic leaders who make a difference. Five qualities. Number one, authentic leaders who make a difference are marked by a desire to go the distance. Authentic leaders who make a difference are marked by a desire to go the distance. This is not about getting involved in ministry and signing up for ministry Sunday the next time we have one. It's not about volunteering to work in kids' ministry. It's about a desire to go the distance. What do I mean by go the distance? It's about involvement. It's about serving with a steadfastness of heart and soul, with a resolve. See, folks, because a lot of people, when they get involved in ministry, they get involved until the first crisis comes. Or they get involved until they don't get their way. Or they face opposition. Or someone ruffles their feathers. And then they quit. They resign. It's the Lord's will. The Lord's calling me to do something different. Paul had to address this. The Thessalonian believers followed Paul because they knew and they saw his loyalty in spite of the difficulty. Look at some of the difficulties he faced. You yourselves know. Paul is calling on the facts to be presented. You yourselves know, brothers, that our ministry to you was not in vain. It was not empty. It was not ineffective. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, then we came here. We still had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict. Acts chapter 17. You can read about the conflict. You can read about the riot. I've never yet caused a riot as a pastor of a church. Well, we've come close. If you're going to do anything for the Lord, there's going to be conflict. I'm just letting you know. And I think that one of the missing ingredients in the lives of Christians who serve their Lord is the missing ingredient of courage. Courage. Determination. Steadfastness. Grit. Because often when we get into a situation, when we get into an opportunity to serve, folks, this might be someone else, it may not be you, because I've seen a lot of you struggle and work through to resolution in your areas of ministry. But in over 30 years of ministry, I've seen a lot of folks who have signed on and then quit, and then signed on and then quit, and that has become a pattern. Authentic leaders who make a difference are marked by a desire to go the distance. I love Jeremiah. What do you think of when you think of Jeremiah? What was he known as? The weeping prophet. You think of this kind of codependent guy in the fetal position, just crying all the time when you hear that. No, Jeremiah actually started his ministry off with a very interesting promise. His message was to the southern kingdom, and his message was not a happy, slappy message of prosperity. Rather, this was to be the drive of his ministry. Jeremiah 1:10, you are to go in, you are to pluck up, you are to break down, you are to destroy, you are to overthrow, you are to build and to plant. How many of you want to sign up for that? Now, in the midst of that commission to the prophet Jeremiah, listen to what God said. Do not be afraid of them. Now, when God says to you, don't be afraid of them, that implies something. That implies that there is going to be cause for you to be afraid. I am not going to be afraid going into a, excuse the reference, to an octagon with a guy that's about this tall and about 90 pounds. Okay, I'm not really going to be too much afraid unless, you know, he really shows me up. You put me in there against somebody who's really big, I'm going to be afraid. God doesn't just say, don't be afraid if there's not human cause to be afraid. Jeremiah did have human cause to be afraid. But in the midst of that, God said, don't be afraid, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. That's 1 verse 8. Listen to chapter 1, verse 17 to 19. But you, Jeremiah, dress yourself for work. Put on your big boy pants. For I am with you. Arise, say to them everything that I command you. Don't hold anything back. Do not be dismayed by them. So now God is giving Jeremiah where his fear is going to come from. He's saying, do not be dismayed by them. And behold, I will make you this day a fortified city, an iron pillar, bronze walls, and against the whole land, against the kings of Judah, its officials, its priests, and the peoples of the land, verse 19, they will fight against you. And they did. Right from the beginning of Jeremiah's ministry, right until Babylon came in and steamrolled the southern kingdom. They fought against Jeremiah from the beginning to the end. But guess where Jeremiah was? He was breaking the tape at the end of the race. There was a man who had determined to go the distance with God's strength. Folks, that's the kind of leaders who make a difference. It is the people who desire to go the distance. Gordon MacDonald tells a story. Let me read it for you. I was at the Pennsylvania Relays, a famous Eastern track meet, and our relay team was running in the championship race. I was the leadoff man in the second lane. The man in the first lane held the 100-meter dash record for prep school runners at that time. He also held a record for arrogance, because when I got to the line and put my starting blocks down, he said, "May the best man win. I'll be waiting for you at the finish line." Don't you love people like that? We went into the blocks, the gun sounded, he took off, and seven of us settled in behind him. We went around the first turn and down the back stretch. About 180 meters into the race, I suddenly saw the record holder in front of me, holding his side and groaning as he jogged along. We passed him like he was standing still, and because I'm such a gentleman, I waited for him at the finish line. At the end of the race, my coach took me aside and said, "I hope you've learned a lesson today. It makes little difference whether you hold the record for the 100-meter dash if the race is 400 meters long." In ministry, in your service, right? Do you have a desire to go the distance? A desire to be there for the long haul? To not just start, but to finish strong? In spite of struggles, in spite of, oh, by the way, you'll be working with people. Do you know what that means? That means you're going to have struggles. That means you're going to have conflicts that need to be worked through. Have a desire to go the distance. That's what marks a leader who makes a difference. Number two, authentic leaders who make a difference are marked by a commitment to honor God. Read verse 4 and verse 6. "But just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak not to please man, but to please God, who continually tests the heart." Down to verse 6. "Nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ." Implied, he didn't. Authentic leaders, authentic servants, authentic people who want to love God with all of their strength are marked by a commitment to honor God. W.A. Criswell pastored First Baptist Church of Dallas for 52 years. And he died with strength like he was still in his 30s. Tells a story about a coachman at a train station, a very busy train station. And this guy just kept his cool all the time. It was a very busy station, and he was ushering people on and off the train. He was dealing with the gruntled and the disgruntled people. I think that's how you would put it. He was dealing with all sorts of people. I mean, you know what it's like if you work with the public. You don't always deal with people at their best, do you? You don't always deal with people at their Sunday best. You don't always deal with people who are even nice. And this guy was dealing with people and moving them along professionally, courtesy, and with tact. And he never lost his cool. So this passerby comes up and he asks him, "How is it that you can deal with so many hurried and harried and even disturbing people and still maintain your composure?" This coachman looked at this passerby and he said, "It's really no big deal. I don't have all these people I have to please." He pointed up to the second floor window behind him. And he said, "My boss is up there. I only have to please him. There is nothing more liberating in ministry and in service than to recognize that the only one whom you have to ultimately please is your God." A conviction like that frees you from the tyranny of trying to please everybody. But it also gives you boldness to speak what is necessary to be said. That's what Paul is saying here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. In his commentary on this section, Todd Beale writes these words. In contrast to many today, including some in the church, who gain confidence from the approval ratings of polls, Paul was concerned only about one person's approval. The source of our proclamation should be a heart that is confident before God, because God himself knows our heart, and that is our sole motive to please him. Paul wanted his people to know something. He wanted to know that his source of boldness, his source of conviction, was not that he had bodyguards behind him, was not that he spoke behind bulletproof glass. His motive was this. He is not in this to please men. He is in this to please God. And it is this God who examines our hearts. And he knows us when nobody else does. And that's liberating. May I encourage you to live and to serve with an audience of one. Many of you will know the name Albert Pujols. 39 years old, born in the Dominican Republic, currently with the LA Angels. Most of the seasons he spent with the St. Louis Cardinals. I bet Brad did some of the dirt for them, didn't you? Three-time MVP, 9-time All-Star. The guy has 2 World Series rings. Sporting News Player of the Year 3 times. 2-time Golden Glove player for first base. National League batting champion once. Home run champ twice. His career stats are pretty amazing for a guy he's still playing. Batting average for his lifetime, seasonal batting average, was .325. 3,202 hits, 2,075 RBIs, 656 home runs, and there is not an asterisk next to the number. Some of you will get that. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? It's pretty important, isn't it? Listen to Albert Pujols' words. Believe it or not, baseball is not the chief ambition of my life. Interesting for a guy that's so driven and so good at his profession. He continues. Becoming a great baseball player is important to me, but it is not my primary focus, because I know the Hall of Fame is not my ultimate final destination. My life's goal is to bring glory to Jesus. You know, that man has his goals, he has his perspective in place. He is marked by a commitment to honor God. He's a guy that's going to make a difference. Do you? I mean, is that one of the things that drives you in your service? See, when we have a commitment to honor God in our service, it's not about us. It's not about even our desires. It's about him. It's about his glory. It is about his honor. It is about his fame. And it's about the fact that we're accountable to him. And when we realize that he is our ultimate audience and that we are accountable to him ultimately, it frees us from the tyranny of human criticism. Authentic leaders who make a difference are marked by a commitment to honor God. That marked Paul. Number 3. Authentic leaders who make a difference are marked by a willingness to be vulnerable. Being vulnerable. I looked that up. It's an interesting word, actually. I won't bore you with all the details of what the word actually means. But at its very core, to be vulnerable means that you're able to be hurt. You actually open yourself up to the possibility of being hurt. Love is most profoundly expressed when we are vulnerable. I'm going to say that again. Love is most profoundly expressed when we are vulnerable. Hear me. Leadership is not about talents and techniques. It's about caring for the people you lead. Leadership is not about talents and techniques. It is about caring for those who you lead. People will not care how much you know, finish it for me, until they know how much you care. That could be written over this passage in the ministry of the Apostle Paul. Paul had a lot of other churches that he was responsible for, but it seems as though Thessalonica was treated as his only church. At least that's what you'd almost hear implied in this passage. They had become very dear to him, verse 8. He was more concerned for them than he was for his own comfort, verse 9. He labored night and day, so he wasn't even a burden to them. Do you remember what Paul did as an occupation? He made tents. There was no sense of entitlement from Paul. And look at his image that he gives us of vulnerability. It's of a mother nursing her child. Is there anything more beautiful and tender and vulnerable? A nursing mom shares her life and her heart with that baby. That's what Paul did. In his ministry to these people, he shared his heart and his life with these people. Listen to what one commentator says about the nursing mother. She conforms her life around the life of the newborn. Is that true? Just looking around, do they? Do you conform your life around the life of your newborn? Yes, of course you do. Why? In order to properly meet those child's needs. She is delighted to give of her life to her children because she loves them so much. That was Paul's commitment to this church. It was a willingness to be vulnerable, to put himself in a place where he was hurt. He sacrificed for the people in Thessalonica. And yet, in a lot of cases, I find people are kind of unwilling to sacrifice in areas of service. Oh, a lot of you do. A lot of you do sacrifice and then some. Why is it people are unwilling to put themselves out there? To step up to a new challenge or a different challenge? Why is it that some people are so unwilling to serve in a way that is vulnerable? Well, maybe it's their time. Maybe it's just too much effort. Maybe we've been burned in the past, and we're just not willing to move on and forgive. Vulnerable people are transparent. They open up. They share not only the gospel, but they share their own lives. We have a high priest who did that. His name is Jesus, and we read these words, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tested in every way as we are, yet without sin." Do you know how Jesus could identify with you? Do you know how Jesus could identify with me? He came here and he lived among us. So you not only have to get that vulnerability, but that vulnerability is also marked by getting your hands dirty. The second image that Paul uses here of his ministry among the Thessalonians, it was not of a nursing mother, but of a father. Like a dad with his children, verses 11 and 12. The people that you will serve, the children that you will serve, need your comfort, they need your encouragement. You know what else they need? Sometimes? Our correction. That's what ministry is about. One writer says, it is not enough for leaders just to be compassionate, tender, and caring as spiritual mothers. They also, big word also need to live lives that in their motives and actions set the standard for those who follow them. Furthermore, they need to teach the truth faithfully and call their spiritual children to obedience to Jesus. That's what it means to be vulnerable. It's not just about being tender and compassionate, it's also about getting our hands dirty. Hear this. At the core of Christianity, linked to the gospel, are deep and meaningful relationships. Would you agree to that? Here's how I wrote it down. Deep and meaningful relationships are at the heart of Christianity. Would you agree with that? Yeah, they are. Just look at the one another's and in the New Testament. Look at how God has called together the church of God. It is no surprise then that Satan attacks us right here. And he attacks us, I think, most vehemently here in the church. He attacks us in our relationships. Just the way he attacked our first parents in Genesis 3. I challenge you to do something. Go home and read the historical account of Genesis chapter 3. And I want you to see how Satan attacked our first parents. They both were kind of there. They were both kind of conniving to get around each other. They were also trying to get around God. Then when push came to shove, what did they do? Instead of addressing it directly, they began to blame each other. And they all started to shift the blame. They avoided personal responsibility for their actions. And the bottom line is, they avoided being vulnerable, and they avoided being real. And that's why we're in the situation we're in today. That's where Satan attacked. He attacked our first parents in the midst of their relationship. That's how the enemy attacks the church. He attacks us because we're unwilling to face issues that we have with each other. We'd rather just go around and not talk to someone. We'd rather move sort of stealthily out the door instead of addressing relational issues. We don't want to own up to our part in struggles. We'd rather place blame. That's what Satan did to our first parents. That's what he tries to do here. That's what he tries to do in every church. Hey, I just want to quickly show you how Paul breaks down his life and ministry. Look at verse 10. You are witnesses, and God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct before you believers. He marks down his own ministry, and he says, you know what, there are really three things that I want to show, that I want to have mark my ministry and my relationship with you. Number one, devotion. I want to prioritize God. Number two, righteousness. I'm going to live without smoke screens. I'm going to live without cover-ups. This has to do with conduct that is open and honest before others. I'm not going to live under a cloak. I'm not going to live under a cloud of hypocrisy. I want my relationship to be vulnerable, and if it's going to be vulnerable, it's going to be marked by devotion, it's going to be marked by righteousness, and it's going to be marked by blamelessness. Now, blamelessness is not a claim to be perfect. It's about living a life that is above reproach. Not having anything in our closet that could come out to discredit the gospel and give Satan ammunition. That's how I want to live my life. That's how I want to live my ministry. That's the kind of leaders that make a difference. You're vulnerable. Number four, authentic leaders who make a difference are marked by selfless love for others. Look at verse 3. Our appeal does not spring from error or impunity or any attempt to deceive. Then jump down to verse 5. For we never came to you with words of flattery, as you know, nor with pretext for greed. God is witness. It's a cartoon with two little girls on a rocking horse. They were obviously sisters. And the caption over one of their heads goes, "If one of us got off, I would have more room." See, her motive was obvious. Her motive was to her sister, "Get off, I want more room." Paul's ministry was marked by the exact opposite. Paul's ministry to the church in Thessalonica was marked by selfless love for those around him. That's what marks leaders who make a difference. When Paul came to Thessalonica, he didn't come for what he could get. He came for what he could give. Now let me say something. Serving does give us a sense of fulfillment. I would lie to you if I said it doesn't. Serving, you ready for this one? Serving Christ, serving his church, makes you feel good. It does. I mean, if it didn't, nobody would do it, right? Serving is not ultimately about you. My serving is not just about having my personal needs met. Serving Jesus Christ is not about a personal agenda. It's not about what we get, it's about what we give. That's what marks leaders who make a difference. And Paul was so confident in this, he says, "Look, you guys know this, you've seen it, and God is witness." Paul wasn't afraid to say that. He wanted the Thessalonians to know something. He wanted the Thessalonians to know that the gospel was free. And the gospel is free to everyone who is here today. And the message of hope and the message of God's forgiveness through Christ is free to each and every one of you today. And Paul also wanted to tell us that, you know what? He wasn't coming with any strings attached either. He was serving them, and he was serving them with a selfless, sacrificial, self-giving love. Authentic leaders are marked by that. They're marked by a selfless love for others. They take Paul's exhortation in Philippians chapter 2 to consider others as more important than yourself. That's what marks leaders who make a difference. Number 5. Authentic leaders who make a difference are marked by a longing for another kingdom. They are marked by longing for another kingdom. They're looking for something a whole lot more. Look at the end of verse 12. I'm going to read the whole verse. "We exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory." A leader, a servant, a worker for the gospel who makes a difference is longing for another kingdom. They're looking for that eternal city that has foundations, said the writer to the Hebrews, whose builder and maker is God. They're not just serving to fill a class. They're not just serving to raise a budget or to preach a sermon or to buy someone a coffee. they are serving, I think it was Stephen Covey that said, you want to serve with the long view in mind. You want to look beyond here, and you want to have the long view in mind. You want to, in a sense, begin with an end in mind, is what Covey was getting at. And that's what we look for. In chapter 1, it said that we had our considerations changed, our expectations were changed, and now we're looking for and we're waiting for the Son who comes from heaven. And that's how we serve. We serve with that perspective in mind. Would you like to be remembered today as an authentic leader who really makes a difference? I would. Authentic leaders who make a difference have a desire to go the distance. They don't just show up and leave. They have a commitment to honor God above all else. They have a willingness to be vulnerable. And guess what? If you're vulnerable, you'll sometimes get hurt because your heart's exposed. You have a selfless love for others and a growing desire to be there for them, not the other way around. And you long for another kingdom. That's what an authentic leader looks like. Let's serve together today with that in mind. Lord, today we pray that you would raise up leaders in our church. You would raise up young people, teenagers, young adults, middle-aged folks, older folks, who are authentic leaders, who seriously want to make a difference for the cause of Jesus Christ. In his name we pray. Amen.